God, why don't you tear the sky open and come down? This prayer of Isaiah's is the anguished cry of a desperate people. The time has long gone for polite prayers. God, make yourself known to us in the stillness of our hearts, that kind of thing. Times are desperate. The people have returned from exile in Babylon. Their country is in ruins. They are homeless, persecuted, fatigued, feeling totally inadequate for the rebuilding job that is before them. And they are surrounded by people who are saying, "So, where's this God of yours now? God, why don't you tear the sky open and come down?" It's easy for us to forget that the people of the Bible was often so frustrated by God's apparent lack of activity. We sometimes tend to think of the people in the Bible as people whose faith knew no bounds and whose experience of God was close and uninterrupted. But the Bible is actually full of prayers like this one. From early in the Genesis stories all the way to Jesus on the cross crying, "My God, why have you abandoned me?" The experience of God's apparent absence is a frequent one. And those who tell you that you are not allowed to express any doubt or frustration with God have obviously been reading some other Bible than our one. It is a normal and frequent experience to find ourselves longing, even pleading for God to break into our world in a dramatic way and do something extraordinary to solve our situation and prove all the doubters wrong, only to be frustrated in our wish and to find God strangely silent and unobtrusive. Now, Isaiah is probably one of the biblical characters who most contributed to our idea of a readily accessible God. Early in the book, we read of Isaiah's dramatic experience of God calling him to be a prophet. In a dramatic visionary experience, he finds himself in the throne room of heaven, being directly addressed by God and manhandled by angels and cherubim and seraphim. But now, that seems like a long time ago. Isaiah, now a much older man, is returning with the exiles and is as desperate as anyone for God to do something extraordinary, something dramatic and earth-shattering. Why don't you tear the sky open and come down? Shake the mountains, make the nations tremble with fear. Something in me resonates with that. Something in me is always wanting God to shake the mountains and to speak in a voice like thunder and to appear in dramatic, blinding flashes of light. It would make relating to God so much easier, wouldn't it? And other people would be so much less dismissive. I could cooperate with God so much more easily if I always knew what God was saying. And if I could always see how the Spirit was moving. But in my experience, blinding flashes of light are rather scarce, and visions of God's throne room have actually been even scarcer. God more often speaks in a still, small whisper and moves silently through the shadows. Very often, I'm not sure what God is saying at all. And even when I think I am detecting the voice, there is still plenty of room for a suspicion that I may just be hearing the voice of my own thoughts. So often, we can interpret an experience one way or the other, but then the words that we put on it when we describe it often tend to dictate how others view our experience, or view our sanity, depending on their perspective, but I try telling a prospective employer that God told you that this was the job for you. Doesn't go down well. Try even telling your friends that God healed you of the flu. They tend to look at you sideways and go, "Yeah, right." even if you do have a really dramatic experience, the way that it's told tends to kind of amplify the colour and oomph. And others hearing you may actually get the impression that this is an everyday sort of thing for you. That maybe Isaiah went to the throne room each morning for a daily briefing. But even for our biblical heroes, that's not the way it is. If you read Luke's account in Acts of the conversion of the Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus, it's all blinding lights and booming voices from heaven. But when you read Paul's own account of it in Galatians, it's a little more subdued. Even in Acts, there is an ambiguity about the experience that must have had people looking sideways at Paul, because although Paul heard the voice of Christ and clearly his life was changed forever, those who were with him heard nothing, says Luke. Likewise, when Jesus was baptized, he heard the voice of God saying, "You are my beloved son," but according to John, others who stood there just heard thunder. Maybe it's similar with some of God's other dramatic actions in the Bible. What about when the Israelites made their dramatic escape from the pursuing Egyptian chariots, an event still annually celebrated by the Jews as a miraculous deliverance by the hand of God? Perhaps the Egyptians didn't notice God's involvement at all. They just thought they got their chariots bogged after recent heavy rains. Whether you see God's hand or not is often a matter of perspective. Whenever we are tempted to feel inadequate about the scarcity of miraculous experience of God in our lives, we do well to remember Isaiah crying out in frustration at the ambiguous and unconvincing nature of God's actions. Whether we like it or not, God does not seem to be into saturation self-publicity campaigns. Despite the fact that we are constantly surrounded by and immersed in the loving, creative activity of God, the vast majority of it can be observed by atheists and explained in entirely different ways. To hear the whispering voice of God will usually require you to lean close to God and train yourself to listen carefully. To expect to be able to hear the voice of God on demand when you want without practice is, I reckon, a little bit like being able to pick out and appreciate the piccolo part in a Mozart symphony when normally you only listen to AC/DC. Or expecting your nose to discern the subtle variations between an unwooded Chardonnay and the oak-barreled one when normally you drink Diet Coke by the slab. Have you ever had that experience of walking out of a loud concert and finding it takes a few minutes before you can even hear the cars going past? Let alone the rustle of leaves in the breeze. Or even walking into a dark room from the light and finding that it takes 5 minutes or so for your eyes to adjust before you can see properly. Sit quietly outside in one spot for half an hour and take note of how much more you see and hear than you did in the first few minutes. Some of us have been spending the day on retreat doing exactly that. We were asked by our retreat leader, who had no idea what I was going to preach about tonight, and I had no idea what he was going to do, asking us to do exactly that. Take a walk through your favourite garden with a trained expert, with a David Attenborough type, and you will quickly discover that there is far more going on here than you ever were aware of. But if you put in the hours of observation and study that David Attenborough has, you could do it too, but if you don't put that work in, you probably never will. So too with learning to discern the movements of the Holy Spirit and hear the voice of the risen Christ. Unless you are immersing yourself in the Scriptures and establishing a rhythm of prayer in your life where you regularly set aside time to be quiet and to do nothing but focus your heart and mind on Christ, then your experience of God probably won't be a lot more significant than kind of the occasional sighting of a lizard in the garden. And even if you do dedicate yourself to that, don't expect dramatic changes overnight. Don't expect the dramatic to become normal. David Attenborough didn't get his experience of the natural world in a weekend. And that's a lot more accessible than what we're talking about here. So why is God so unwilling to disrupt the laws of the universe, to tear the sky open and come down dramatically? Why does God whisper in the shadows and wait to see if anyone's listening instead of writing the message in big letters across the sky? Don't we long for God to do something like that so that all the people who have given us that quizzical look will go, "Oh, wow, you were right all along"? Be nice, wouldn't it? I don't know why it doesn't happen. Maybe because Christ is not interested in bludgeoning us into a response. Maybe because the sort of response that Christ most values is the uncoerced yes of the person who is willing to exercise some trust and seek him out, rather than the reticent, okay, of the person who needs to have a piano dropped on them from above before they look up. Maybe too because God is not willing to be some kind of trained house pet for us who turns on the miracles on demand to satisfy our desire for everything to be easy and in your face. Maybe Christ wants to retain some mystery, some secrets, to see if you're fair dinkum about the relationship before inviting you into the Holy of Holies. As we begin this season of hope and expectation, we need to keep that in mind, that the realization of our hopes will come in God's way and not usually in the overstated intervention that we long for, where any fool could say, "Yep, that's God, all right." And therefore, the legitimate expectation we have that God will be active in our lives needs to lead us to prayer and to preparation, so that when Christ comes, we won't be oblivious to it and just go on our mindless way. God will probably not make the mountains shake and the nations tremble, but the flutter of angels' wings will be heard by those who truly listen. When Christ comes, some people see nothing more than a helpless baby born to a refugee woman sheltering in a cowshed. Some of you will take the time to see what's really going on.